Hot.
The button is pushed.
Oh!
Oh, shit! Oh, shit! It is!
That's so great. That's the best catchphrase.
It's really not. It's like, I know someone else has to be hearing that, like, God damn it, really, with his ass. Why? Why are you like this?
Motherfucker, why are you doing that?
Why are you like this?
All right, Brandon Chalmers, housekeeping out of the way. We are part of the Hard Knock Life Podcast Network. So Hard Knock
Damn
Media.
Right we are.
Hard Knock Media. Hard. I said Hard Knock Life. I'm going to get shit for that.
Fuck that, Hove. Damn right.
But yeah, we're part of the Hard Knock Media Podcast Network. Check us out, hardknockmedia.com. That's N-O-C as in Nerds of Color. You can check out the media page with all the other podcasts that are featured on the network. It's a great place to be. I'm so happy that we haven't gotten kicked off yet.
Yeah! Woo!
So we must be doing something right.
Gold stars all around. That's right. Mama said I wouldn't be anything. Look at me now.
That's right, Mama. That's Shove it!
That's right, out of prison. Ha! Yeah.
Oh, shit. That got kind of real.
Kidding, not looking, but kidding. Anyway.
Moving on, Brandon Chalmers.
Yep. Extra punchy today, Jamie. Extra punchy.
Okay. I wonder why.
Future episodes. Anyway, moving on.
Brandon, what have you been geeking on this past week?
So I have been on a bit of a kick of – I've been seeing a ton of this across social media. A lot of people just basically trying to be less shitty to the planet. And the big thing trending right now is like getting rid of a lot of single-use plastic stuff. So – things like straws and like, plastic cutlery at like, you know, restaurants or whatever it is. And just the idea of kind of, you know, you have a party or whatever it is. Don't get a bunch of red Solo cups, get aluminum cans and koozies or something like that. Something that can be recycled or just give people actual glasses and just do dishes like a fucking adult. So because of that, I hadn't been guilty of it at work because I have like – I went to REI and got like one of those like reversible spork like utility sort of things where it's like –
Oh, yeah.
You know, like one BPA piece of plastic. It's got like a spoon on one end and the knife. It's got like a slightly like beveled edge to be able to kind of slightly cut things or whatever it is. And like that's something that I keep at my desk. But I tend not to carry it around with me a ton of places. So I was talking about it and one of my friends, Emily, who has an awesome Instagram page at Fangirls Are We. And she decided to do something very kind for me and bought me a full on kit.
Holy shit.
That has everything. So the website is simplystraws.com. And the idea is the case itself is made from recycled plastic.
Nice.
So that's completely good. And then inside there are bamboo utensils that Ooh. Are all food grade that have been like beveled and polished and everything else together. So you get a spoon, you get a knife,
nice.
You get fork, nice. You get a set of chopsticks.
Oh shit, son, we're going to Iron Age.
I know. And then you get a glass straw that also has a bottle brush inside of it. Go ahead.
Is that straw bubble tea with? Can you drink bubble tea? Can you drink the bubbles out of it?
No, I don't know if you can do bubble tea. Mm. That looks a little on the small side, I'll admit. I thought she liked you. In all fairness, I haven't seen any – now, mind you, I haven't really looked that much, but I haven't seen many bubble tea straws.
They make steel ones.
Maybe that's the difference. Maybe you want that sort of steel or whatever it is. The glass I like because it doesn't transfer any sort of flavors.
Yeah, that's
anyone
cool.
who is an aficionado of any sort of like bourbons or whiskeys or anything else like that, a flask is great. But a flask that is glass doesn't transfer any of that metal flavor into everything. I should just back the Kickstarter about that. Hopefully that'll be coming at some point in the future.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's always been an adage. Like, that's why you drink whiskey out of proper glasses and you drink beer out of cans, because beer is going to end up most likely tasting like shit anyway. That's why all the fancy beers usually come in glass bottles.
Could you, for a flask, I would worry about it shattering, like, when you're taking it to the movie theater while you're watching X-Men to get drunk and stuff. Could you, like, could they do a thing where they line a, like, an aluminum flask with glass on the inside to get the same effect? Or
the Kickstarter that I backed that actually just recently ended is a company called Rag Proper, all one word, and essentially the idea was they did it in two different sizes and they offer two different versions, and the glass is like a composite sort of glass, like you see with these glass sports bottles that's like it's able to be dropped downstairs and everything else, and it's almost like windshield style glass. Like, it's designed to be intentionally strong. And then they gave you two options. One was a leather, like a hand wrapped case on the outside, if you're like super bougie and like want that weathered leather look over time where it starts to shift in, you know, your oils or whatever it is. I opted for the like rubberized outer shell.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. The cool part about it is that it's got a little window there. Anyone who's ever filled a flask knows you're going to fuck pour it all over your counter because you get the little funnel. Like, you get two options. You get one that, like, okay, so I've got like the metal, like Stanley one. And you can see this thing, and like, you can pick these up anywhere, Walmart, wherever it is, for like 10, 12 bucks. And they're great. They're functional. They work really well. It's a trusted brand name. And I can huck it down a flight of stairs and it ain't dropping a thing. The problem is usually anything you pour in this that is nice starts tasting kind of metally after maybe an hour.
Yeah.
So you only fill this thing with cheap, shitty booze. Like, that's the idea. But if you want something nicer, you have to start going outside the box. So the cool thing is the one that I backed gave you two of them. I think it gave you a 6 ounce and a 10 ounce. Okay. So a fair bit of booze, but then it's got the little window on the side. So you can literally just start pouring the booze in and watch it rise on the side and never overfill your flask. And I know you're laughing because I know your wife has probably poured bourbon all over the counter.
Yeah.
And you hear excitement and then shit. And then you make the mental decision of like, well, it's fucking bourbon. I'm going to lick it off the counter. And then you feel like a fucking alcoholic.
Well, no, you put it in a bowl. So like,
oh, and then this. OK, yeah. See, that's what I
would
do.
I'm not an alky, but that's what I would do.
Right. See, and we don't think that way. We're like, don't put a flask in a rounded bottom thing, but a saucer dish or something. Like, yeah, there's a plate is really what it is. That's what we're looking for.
You pregame
plate with a little bit of a beveled edge.
Pregame a little bit, you know.
Pregame a little bit. Anyway, yeah. So anyway,
I love it.
But that's kind of the idea. Is like, I've always been a proponent of like the metal bottles, and you know, a lot of the cups, like there's a cup that I use all the time, mm-hmm. is just like walking around. I like all of the reusable kind of heavy duty stuff. I've always been a proponent of like, buy the nice thing once, you won't have to buy the shitty thing once and then the nice thing.
Yeah,
it's always the way it goes.
Yeah,
you can get away with it sometimes with basic stuff, like some of these metal ones. Like Target sells these, they're a brand called Zak, Z-A-K. You can get them in super bright colors, and they're like 10 bucks a piece. And they're kind of great for that sort of thing. But, you know, buy the nice stuff.
Yeah.
Treat yourself to the stuff. And like in this case,
cheat yourself.
It is currently sold out online. There's multiple colors of this, by the way.
That's fantastic.
They restock all the time. And you can buy it without the straw. If you want to go directly to the utensil manufacturer, you can just buy the straws. But like, you should go get one of these and put it in your backpack,
mm-hmm.
like in your camera bag, wherever it is, and just take it with you. Because we all do this. We all grab like our water bottle and we throw it in our bag with our cameras or whatever it is, or our laptops. Just have this with you and know that you have it. And you even do something as simple as like you go to Taco Bell and they go to hand you the straw. You can be able to go, no thanks.
Yeah.
And sure, it's only, it's just the straw. You're still using the lid for the cup and whatever it is.
Sure.
But like, maybe you do a little bit and everybody does a little bit and it gets a little better over time. And maybe they start to shift to paper style lids or biodegradable style lids or whatever it is over time. But the little things, I'm not trying to like fucking give anybody a hard time about, you know, trying to save the world and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not doing that shit. I'm just trying to be less shitty is really the key.
I think
you should totally go do that.
Yeah. Little things here and there, they add up to bigger things if more and more people do them, I think. So.
Right. Yeah. So that's the idea. So that's why I like – that's why I'm – she did it, and then she saw me notice the kit that she had, and I was asking questions, and just one day she randomly dropped it on my desk and was like, hey, here you go. I got you one. And it was like, that's rad, and now I'm telling everybody else. I'm probably going to buy one or two for some people. So pay it forward. Like,
yeah.
Get the thing, and then once people have the thing, they'll put it in their bag and they'll have it when they go somewhere. Instead of using their utensils, they'll use this stuff, mm-hmm. and then they'll be able to be less shitty to each other.
We actually bought a set of silicone bubble tea straws because we go to bubble tea like maybe every week, and there's no reason for us to get the straws that they have there. The only problem with the silicone straws is there's no edge. So if they give you the plastic, you can't stab it with the bubble tea, but you have
pocket
keys.
Pocket knife, man.
Yeah.
You got to carry a pocket knife.
Yeah, so we stab it with our keys and stuff like that.
That's the idea. You need a silicone straw and a knife, and then you just got to basically just fucking and then bam. And then,
also a tracheotomy if someone is bam, silicone straw right there.
Not necessarily great if you're on like military bases or government facilities or flying much, but most of us aren't and can carry a small pocket knife. It's a world changer. It's a $15 purchase. Do it for yourself.
That's awesome.
So anyway, that's what I've been geeking out about, and like I was really honestly impressed with it just because it was an incredibly kind gift just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But the idea of it now using it, and I've been using it for the last couple of days, and it's like, this is an incredibly practical thing, and that's really rad.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like it. I like it. It's a great idea.
Yeah. So what have you been geeking out about?
Vamp for a little bit. I just got to go over here.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, so he's reaching in for something. I'm confused what we're doing. Okay, it's definitely not a guitar. Thought it was maybe going to be a guitar or something else like that. The package was surprisingly small. When you decided to reach down, I was like, how big can it really be? Oh, hang on. Mafoda? Oh, okay. Hang on. It's actually much larger than what I thought. Is this the speed light?
No, this is... If this was a speed light, Jesus Christ, I could light up an entire fucking neighborhood.
What are we? Okay, so he's got some sort of sack for our audio listeners out there.
Yeah,
he's got some sort of sack, and then wait, hang on, is that the Peak design?
No. This is not a $600 fucking tripod.
This
is a, I think it's like a $120 tripod.
God damn, girl.
But it's a travel tripod. So like it flips up like this, and
it's travel tripods.
Yeah. They call them a travel tripod.
Right, but like if you don't have a travel tripod, then you basically just have a deck is what you're saying. Like that's
but it flips out like this. It's got the rubber roller here for the to let it go. It's got a hook for your bag or whatever.
Oh wow, okay.
It's got a ball head, so you know it swivels around.
Wow. I can hear the metal in that thing too. Like that's nice quality piece you got going on there, bro.
Oh yeah. Because my dad has a old video tripod that is very nice. It's high quality, but over the years, the rubber on the feet has rotted away.
Okay.
And it's so old, the company's out of business. No one makes replacement rubber nibs. And there are a couple of different, you know, solutions to do it, but I needed something that was lightweight and easy to get into tight corners because I've decided to add more fucking jobs to my fucking title business card. I've decided that I want to try to get into real estate photography. So anytime you see a house listing, there's always photos of the inside of the house, and they're always terrible and poorly lit or overprocessed and look like shit. And so I figure if people are willing to pay some asshole to take a camera into a house, take a bunch of photos, I could be that asshole.
Yeah, you could.
So this, I wanted a tripod that was lightweight, that I could carry around easily, and that could, you know, adjust and fit into like closets or bathrooms, or, you know, go up and down and that kind of thing. And right. My dad's tripod has a video head on it, and a video head has this long ass handle so that you can do like,
right.
pans yeah. and up and down and shit.
Right.
But if you're trying to shoot a shitty closet or a bathroom, that ain't gonna happen.
You don't need that.
Yeah.
No.
So I've already shot two houses with this thing.
Nice. And
it's a godsend. It's a godsend.
At what point are you getting a remote trigger so this way you don't physically have to be in behind the camera? Or did I already get ahead of you and you already have one?
I already have a remote trigger.
Okay.
So like long story, I guess. This year, 2019, I decided that I wanted to do more of my art vlog. And I wanted to add some production value to it. So I had a DSLR. And one of the things that I couldn't figure out is to get like a blurry background, which is the dumbest thing in the entire universe. But like I wanted to get that blurry background so like it would look kind of cinematic and stuff.
OK, so you're trying to like manipulate depth of field?
Yeah.
That's essentially what you're saying?
Yeah. I wanted to figure out how to do that. So I learned about like, oh, you're going to need a different kind of lens for that kind of thing. So I picked up like my first Nifty 50 and all that kind of shit.
Right.
And I stuck that on the camera and I was like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how this whole photography rabbit hole, that's how I kind of jumped down this whole photography rabbit hole. But yeah, along with that, I got a remote trigger thing. There's like, there's a device that you can stick on your camera that, hooks up to an app that controls things like the aperture setting, the shutter speed, the white balance, all this kind of stuff. And, and you can just,
you fancy.
You just hit a button, set it and forget it and let it go. The problem is it takes forever to make all these sub calculations. So, one of the things in real estate photography, you need to take a bunch of different exposures so you can combine them later in Photoshop so you get the maximum amount of light into a scene. Because even if you have decent incandescent lights in a room, it's still going to look like shit. So you need to take a bunch of different exposures. And modern cameras can do bracketing. It's called bracketing. You have a bracketing setting in your camera. I'm for sure certain. And there's bracketing on mine and it goes like...
Right.
Chick, 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 even if it's a slow shutter speed. The problem with this app that I have, it takes like 5 minutes to kind of tell the camera Whoa. To do. So like the second house I shot took 2 fucking hours. And I don't think it should have taken 2 hours.
No, it sounds like that app and that remote trigger need to be upgraded at some point along the way.
Or downgraded because I got a dumb trigger.
Well, yeah, sorry. I guess that's more to the point. Something that just does what you're asking of it, which is just actually taking the photo. One feature doesn't need to auto. You're already doing all that.
Yeah.
Take the fucking photo.
Yeah. Just go, fucking go. So I got back after that one, and I was like, I need to get the old manual trigger because I don't want to add more batteries to my kit. So there's a manual trigger that goes along with the Nikon systems.
That's, oh, cool. All right.
So the new one is like the nice little cute remote thing with the cell phone batteries. And I'm like, motherfucker, I don't need to like get a stack of watch batteries. You know,
no, if there's something simple that works. Is it actually like a cable? That
plugs into the thing? Yeah, it's a cable that plugs to your camera. Yes.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Bam. Just. Oh, it'll be great too. You can set it up on the tripod and then you can get the big drop cloth to put over your head and then hold the thing out. Yeah. Hold the speed light up with one hand and then the clicker out with the other one. Just have Johnny stand behind you with a smoke bomb. Just
yeah. Boom. I didn't use flash. I talked to Johnny about it, our good friend Johnny Shryock Photography. He does corporate headshots. But he was saying that like using a speed light indoors, you're going to get bounces all around. And if you don't know what you're doing and you can't control the light like you want to, and you don't have like a full rig set up, a speed light's probably going to do more harm than good. So I was like,
right,
that sounds good. I'll just set a long exposure and don't get in the shot.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Also, giving an opportunity to capture all the natural light in a room is probably a good thing, and it'll create a more realistic experience for anybody who's actually viewing the house at some point.
So there's a lot of technical stuff that goes along with it too, like HDR, high dynamic range, is no longer the thing. Now people are doing stuff like exposure blending and fusion photography and all this back end shit. So it's a lot more technical than us going out to, like, you know, an event or a festival and catching random people doing cool things, which is a lot more fun.
I don't know. I want to do photography to go out with my camera and go experience things and go see things and capture most things. And I don't mind cleaning some images up a little bit or doing a little bit of stuff or maybe a little bit of color correction. But if I'm spending easily 10 to 12 times the amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
You're editing the shot and getting it right, quote unquote, as opposed to just trying to really get the shot right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Like, especially with like portraits or landscapes or whatever it is, like fuck this, the shit's stationary. The people are sitting there, manipulate them and then get your shot.
Yeah, no, it's not for the enjoyment of the art. I can tell you that. It's to monetize hardcore. And the weird thing is, I don't mind doing the shit work. Like, I was a colorist for a couple of years. You know, I did comic coloring for a couple of years, which is, very few people get into comics wanting to be a colorist, because your name gets left off the book half of the time. You're never in the solicitations. You know, no one ever says, hey, you're a fantastic colorist, unless you are a colorist. So I know a lot of the colorists out there by name, and you know, I know their styles and everything. But, like, you know, I looked at it as a job and a way to get my foot in the door. This I'm kind of looking at like, well, I have one inconsistent job, which is my freelance and illustration stuff. If I can supplement it with yet another inconsistent job, maybe I can combine them and have one consistent job in my
thing. Yeah, I mean, I think at the very least it'll be a steady level of work, whether or not it'll be steady income, whether or not it's going to be all that super lucrative, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
And you never know. Honestly, Jamie, you may end up finding yourself after you spend, you know, 2 months doing this thing that you're like, you know what? The work's really not that bad. It's easy to just go and set up and do because I don't have to deal with people or anything else like that. And there's something kind of nice about that.
Yeah.
And it's you out with the camera and getting some cash going on, and that's always a good thing. At the very least, if it gets you better practice editing, maybe it you know, you start to develop skills in other directions.
Yeah, and I've already used some of those. I also downloaded like an editing panel that does all these things with like luminance maps and all that kind of stuff. I've used some of that in my illustration stuff. So like the skills transfer, and also, every artist needs to learn how to draw interiors and exteriors. So by being confronted by architecture on a regular basis, I'm training my eye to see like
how rooms fit. Yeah, you're having a better idea of perspective and objects and people and places and like, you know, you're essentially doing a real world case study where most people would get architecture books and reference photos and everything else like that to try and get an idea of something. You're experiencing it constantly in a lot of different environments and dealing with people's different design aesthetics and all sorts of things. So like, I imagine that's got to be kind of interesting.
And I get my own reference photo, so that's great.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, right, that's what I'm saying, is like literally you could just be like, you could put together a hit list of like bedrooms or bathrooms or whatever it is and have a ton of like really cool reference stuff of going, wait, I remember there was this old house in wherever it is. Yeah, and like it had this really kitschy, cool like 50s bathroom. I'm going to draw a diner. And in that diner, it's going to have a scene where there's going to have a bathroom. Fuck, there's my inspiration.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that happens. I have no idea. But maybe if it's just more reference stuff for your own brain's sake.
I hope so. It's not, I don't want to say it's easy to do, but it's straightforward. I'm still learning a lot about the post-processing, but going into a place and lining things up and getting a good composition, that's fun to figure out. And their bathrooms are a challenge. Making a bathroom look good is a challenge.
I'm sure. Yeah. It's usually probably a lot of white walls.
Yeah.
A lot of hidden shadows.
Yeah.
And trying to make a room that it's usually designed like a closet look spacious and inviting, and also working around mirrors glass edges and also and like glass surfaces, and not trying not to be in those shots.
Yeah. Thank God I have Photoshop, because I've already painted myself out of a couple of things. So I've already done that.
Probably the question of like, wait, how did you, where are you? Like,
where am I indeed?
Yeah. A lady never kisses and tells. That's right.
Yeah. So I think, if I'm able to put together a decent enough portfolio and get some paid gigs, I might actually consider upgrading my gear, my camera body, which is something I didn't think that would happen this quickly. But we'll see how things shake out.
I mean, like you and I talked about before, don't put good money after bad. But at the same time, if this is even just an end to the means, like if you're going to do this thing and then take a portion of it to put toward the camera body, because the camera body is ultimately something that you want to then be able to do other shoots to be able to earn more money. Okay, that's an investment in yourself. These things make sense.
Yeah.
And you can get a cool toy to go along with it. That's always fun. But yeah, like that totally makes sense. So I get that idea. That seems rad.
And the nice thing about modern cameras, I was talking to my friend Johnny, is that like they can collect a wide dynamic range. Like some of the older cameras, you needed to shoot multiple exposures. But like with a lot of modern cameras, a lot of full frame sensors, a lot of new stuff, you can just set the you can underexpose by a lot. And you still have a lot of information to pull up the shadows, to pull up the midtones, so that you can get a nice shot without having to, instead of, you know, bracketing like four or five shots per room, maybe two, like bam, bam, you know, and you're good to go and stuff. So that's kind of where my head is. We'll see. Also, if anyone out there is trying to sell a house and needs some photography and you're in the DMV area,
Hit up your boy.
Hit up your boy. I'm pretty cheap right now because I don't know what I'm doing. As soon as I get a foot in the door and figure it out.
Hey, hang on. Jesus, I gotta work on your sales pitch.
I'm a cheap date.
No, God damn it. Jesus Christ. Professional top tier level artist, Time Magazine featured artist, entering new forum of real estate photography.
Yeah.
Ready to develop relationships with realtors, price negotiable.
I wonder if there's room in this space to like, if I get to a point where like people are asking me to do this, like if I could bring like an Ultraman toy and just like hide it in the corner of a shot, like my signature will be like random Tokyo toys.
I don't know if your signature can be that, but I bet you would be able to have some Toku toys with you and do a couple personal shots.
Yeah, maybe. That would be kind of fun. like some of the oversized like vinyl toys and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have need of photography and you can't be bothered to do it because it's boring as fuck, hit me up. We'll work something out. I'm still learning and still building a portfolio. That's what I've been geeking out upon.
That's rad, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's very cool.
It's another job.
Yeah, but at least this one's going to potentially fucking pay, as opposed to a lot of the other ones that we have.
I know.
Cool. What are we talking about?
I want to talk about food, and I thought I was going to keep it at like bad Chinese food. Why is Chinese food so bad? Why can't, is it a, you know, chicken or egg thing? But like, I think it's
my fault is really what it is.
I don't see, that's the thing I don't know. So like growing up in the DC area, we have a lot of access to decent Chinese food, but when I was growing up, like, Chinese food to me was the shit we got at, like, Panda Express or, like, random restaurants that serve that cater to, like, Western tastes, like,
right, okay, quote unquote,
Western
right.
tastes. So my experience of Chinese food feels like a typical American experience of Chinese food. And it's only until recent years that I've been much more discerning about it, because I've decided to go out to, like, you know, Sichuan Jin River and to some of these random odd places that serve a more ethnic version of Chinese food. And I'm wondering, like, you know, is the fact that like people are so used to Americanized Chinese food that that's their
one. Well, okay. One, yes.
Right.
Two, let me take a step back and maybe give context. It might be easier for people to understand where my head is.
Okay.
McDonald's, Five Guys, Umami Burger, Bobby Flay's Place, The Ivy.
Uh-huh.
Like, all of these places serve burgers.
Sure.
All of them serve a different series or style or type or flavor profile of essentially a beef patty in between two pieces of bread.
Sure.
Like the quintessential, like, threshold of a burger.
Right.
You know, a ground beef sandwich, essentially, at that
yeah,
point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we as Americans are totally fine with the shit.
Right.
We go to McDonald's. We don't think about it. It's right. not a good burger. It's a consistently mediocre burger
right.
that we put together as comfort food.
I just ate one today.
Right. Right. Like,
yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you go to McDonald's, you go to get a Big Mac, you know exactly what it's going to taste like.
Right.
You know every single McDonald's you go to is going to have the same flavors.
Right.
It's basically the only variable is assembly. That's it.
Right.
You know, whether or not somebody can actually get the burgers even close to being lined up.
They're never lined
really
up.
About it. They're yeah. never.
They're never lined
really
up.
Really not that fucking hard. Anyway, but that's what I'm getting at is, in no way is a McDonald's cheeseburger the same as the Bobby's burger place, right?
Sure.
And if you think about it, the price in between the two, McDonald's sells a burger for what, like $2.50?
Yeah.
Maybe $3 at this point. Let's say it's $2.50. Let's give it a basement price, right?
Yeah.
For $10, you can go to Bobby's and get a proper burger.
Sure.
That is well assembled, done in a much cleaner and controlled kitchen environment, has an incredibly great flavor profile, is going to be incredibly satisfying,
sure.
and isn't going to leave you feeling like that sure was food.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, it just, but, and that's the difference. If burgers, the most kind of quintessentially boring thing in Americanized food, can also be one of the most exciting things in Americanized food. The idea of an American culture when – because Chinese food really started hitting up in the 50s, didn't it? Isn't that when things really started to hit?
I think so. But
because like
– but here's – so here's the weird thing. I agree. If you want to get a better burger, you're going to have to pay for it.
Right.
For Chinese food, if you want better Chinese food, it's not necessarily that much more expensive. Like, P.F. Chang's. P.F. Chang's.
Right. Yeah.
I forgot what I got, but it was pretty pricey.
Right.
It was okay. It was better than mall Chinese, but...
Right, but that's only because the environment that you're in and the experience along with it, and when you're paying that much for that, the ingredients should be a much higher quality.
Right. But, you know, I would take a plate of Dan Dan noodles over what I ate in a heartbeat. And right, then Dan Dan noodles are like $4.
Right, but you can't compare that. Again, that's a TGI Fridays to a single freestanding passion restaurant run by a family who understands culture and the flavor profiles that go along with it and present something that is unique.
Right.
You know what I mean? You go to, you know, a fucking food truck.
Yes.
That is super good. And like grilled cheese trucks. A simple, simple thing.
Yes.
So good when done properly.
Oh, yeah.
And can be such shit otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, you're buying the experience there.
Yeah.
P.F. Chang's is the TGI Fridays of Chinese food.
Well,
you can get some decent things.
Yeah.
You can always have an enjoyable experience in the sense that it is a clean environment. It is relatively inviting. The seating is comfortable. The menu provides a lot of options, none of which are actually really all that spicy.
No,
and
they're,
I
they're
have
not.
An issue with the sliding scale of what spice actually is. But yeah. I guess if you're going to make the same menu for the D.C. area as it is in like Wisconsin,
yeah.
then fuck it. I don't know
yeah.
what else you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
It's as spicy as it's going to fucking be for the cheddar heads, and that's just what it's going to be. So can somebody pass the goddamn chili oil? Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But, like, that at least makes sense because there's some sort of, like, corporate thing.
Right.
But I feel like the argument really is, like, is it that how can there be so much real estate in between, or what constitutes good Chinese food?
I think I'm trying to figure out what came first. Like, if a person's first experience of Chinese food is actual Chinese food from like the mainland or from like mom's cooking, then Americanized Chinese food tastes like barf to them. But if your first experience with Chinese food is what you get at the mall, then anything beyond that is going to be amazing. I guess
that's not necessarily true.
Well, that's
true
not true, right? Because like we had that banquet at Keith's place,
right?
With Keith's family, and there was stuff that you and I could not do.
Yeah,
like,
and
there's stuff
and
that we could not do.
Right, and it's you know, I think it's not even necessarily flavors. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of cuts that,
yeah.
as my Americanized palate is not used to, is not comfortable with. By no means does it make them bad or uninviting or anything else like that. It's one of those things where it's just, for me, that ain't my jam. But Americanized Chinese food is so sugary that, like,
it's a little.
I don't know who the general actually was. Like, I thought that it's a completely made up character. If
I
I'm
feel
not
like
mistaken.
He was made up, or he had crippling diabetes.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I guess
rode on horseback because he didn't have feet is really what I'm getting at.
I guess at this point, so I understand like a lot of Chinese restaurants had to change their recipes and flavors back in the day because that's how you introduce a cuisine to a general populace. But like, we're so far removed from the ye old days. Is it possible? Do you think that the Chinese restaurants have inadvertently created this Ouroboros loop of like, well, Americans only eat this style of Chinese food, so let's make this style of Chinese food. And then you have people growing up eating that style of Chinese food, and that's their only conception of that Chinese food, so that when they get confronted with real Chinese food, they're just like,
yes,
what the fuck am I eating?
Yes, 100%. And I think part of it is that there aren't the same, at least it feels like, levels of passion about good Chinese food that there are about other things.
Hmm.
People will line up for great barbecue.
Sure.
There's nothing fancy about great barbecue.
Right.
It's a patience and love game more than anything else.
Yeah.
I gotta believe there are dishes that I imagine making a proper order of Mapo tofu requires a passion and skill and respect to the ingredients that the standard dude who is making your pepper steak at the random down the street, like, strip mall Chinese place.
Yeah.
Doesn't have.
Yeah.
Like it's a certain level of love that goes there. It makes me wonder if there's going to be some sort of like, I feel weird. Cause it's like, it's a catch 22.
Right.
I feel like you need hipsters to almost like try and tackle it and gentrify it. So this way they can start culturally in the food environment, gaining strength for it. Like I see, with the Momofuku is David Chang.
David Chang. Yeah.
Yeah. I see him doing a lot of that stuff, but then I wonder, like, he even rebels against a lot of the appropriating of food and cultures that go along with it. Like, it fucking bothers him.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
I don't know of many high profile Asian chefs who are really pushing it. And I'm sure it's that I'm in a very sheltered bubble and just don't really realize. Like, there have to be some Asian chef rock stars out there in Brooklyn or out in LA or whatever
there,
it is. Like, yeah,
they're gotta be.
Fucking have to be. But like, yeah. How do those people break through the bubble and suddenly be able to become the Bobby Flay or the Aaron Sanchez's, or, you know, like, how do they break that? Like, where is the Marcus Samuelson of that sort of thing? Where's the Asian chef on fucking Chopped or something like that? I mean, like,
yeah, I don't know.
You've got, what is it? Yan, like from Yan Can Cook.
That's right, ancient. Like, that's like old PBS. That was like when I was growing up.
Right. But like, it was a super inviting way of getting people to learn how to cook and enjoy Asian food that they wouldn't necessarily be comfortable with. And he'd be like, oh, well, you can totally buy this here. And this is over in this thing. And the canned stuff is totally good. And you can totally get away with this.
You don't
eat a traditional Asian market. You can go down the street and go get, like, it was a very inviting way of doing it. I don't know of many shows out there that are even like that on Food Network or the Cooking Channel or anything that are openly tackling that sort of thing and blowing some misconceptions out of the water of like, hey, here's how you make, you know, Dan Dan noodles. So General Chicken is kind of bullshit, but we're going to make a decent version that isn't super sugary but is really good and is going to make everybody be like, fuck, why doesn't everybody make this sort of thing? And you teach people how to properly bread and fry and then wok technique and other things like that that, like, people don't know how to do. I wondered, like, if there's got to be some sort of person who's just willing to be, like, the Rachel Ray of Asian food.
I think accidentally, sometimes Fieri does it. Because whenever we watch Diners, Drive-In, and Dives, he accidentally stumbles into, like, authentic ethnic food from all over the place.
Right. He totally does. But the problem is that dude has such a stigma about him that he loses a lot of that, but nobody else has managed to be as entertaining. Like,
we watch that shit all the time.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, because it's weird. I was just thinking to myself, like, as you were saying that, I was like, we need, like, a bald, more toned down version of him to go find things. And I was like, we had Andrew Zimmer. And then I remember that Andrew Zimmer actually tried to create an Asian restaurant in, like, Wisconsin or whatever it is and end up being kind of a trash human. And then I'm right back to my cultural appropriating fucking hipster dickhead. Like, it's a perfect food circle.
We need a better one. We need a better hipster dude.
Like, that dude has gone to the place. He's eaten the things from the street carts. He's asked, you know, he's had translators with him where he's had a thing where he's like, fuck, this chicken heart in this cart is really good. Yeah. And he starts asking the chef questions. He probably actually has a lot of fucking real world knowledge about this sort of thing, but he's such a douchebag. Yeah. It's like
the way he needs to do it is so and so presents and hire actual chefs from those cuisines and, like, to you know, you're still appropriating, but you're bringing some authenticity back. So, like, the liberals can't get upset at you, and the conservatives can be like, well, if the white guy eats it, like, we can eat it too, kind of thing.
Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Like, we
exactly.
Something's got to be. Yeah, Bobby Flay presents and maybe it's like, I don't know, Frosted Tip Productions or something, like Guy Fieri's production company, like, just brings on some dude who just does not give a fuck and is a super badass. Now I'm realizing there is a guy who's on I'm never going to find his name. keep going. Because now I'm remembering that there is a guy who shows up on, like, Guy's Grocery Games a couple times.
Oh, fun.
Who's a shorter Asian guy. And I'm blanking on his name right now, and I don't want to be a shithead. Keep talking.
Well, because I feel like ramen houses are popping up all over the place. And people now realize that ramen is not just, like, the top ramen that you got in college or anything like that. And I was trying to figure out, because this not only sprung from the fact that you and I went to I can't even remember. I keep wanting to think Shea Wong's, but it was P.F. Chang's. We went to P.F. Chang's, and then this past weekend there's a Chinese restaurant near where my in-laws live that's like Miss Chen's. And They've never gone, and it looks ratty, but it's been there the entire time they've been there. So it's been around for like 35 years. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go to Miss Chen's. They've been here for a reason. They've got to have something decent. And my thinking was, I'm going to order something that not a whole lot of people are going to order, just in case they have actual, like, you know, traditional Chinese flavors in there. You just have to seek it out. And I ordered the double cooked pork, and it still had that syrupy sweet taste to it. It had a lot of vegetables, which was surprising, but it still had that syrupy sweet taste that you associate with like mall Chinese or the P.F. Chang's right. Chinese and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, fuck. Right. I thought there was a diamond in the rough down the street from where Audrey grew up, and I was sorely mistaken.
There is Jet Tila.
Jet Tila. That's the dude.
That's the dude. Yeah, I was looking to see yada 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 yada. Let's see. Chef and partner restaurant industry. Jet specializes in classic Thai and Chinese cooking. Graduate of Le Cordon Bleu and the California Sushi Academy, which feels both like credentially accurate, but also kind of douchey. But I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Okay, randomly my Netflix starts back up. Keep talking, we're good.
Oh, I thought the Halo theme was going to start.
Yeah, I know, right?
That fucking soundtrack. That soundtrack is a banger, dude. The fucking
God.
Halo 2 Steve Vai version.
See, I'm a huge fan of the Incubus cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a wheelhouse for me. It's like, you graduated this year. Halo 2 was a thing, and Incubus was just the all-encompassing perfect circle of my music interests at the time.
So Matt, Matt was around. Matt used to work on audio for Halo 2. And when they recorded the session, when Steve Vai came in to record the session, Bungie shot a video of that. Nile Rodgers was Steve Vai's producer. So there's Nile Rodgers in the warming up doing his widdly 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 way of shit.
Right.
And then Steve comes on and it was amazing. And I think you can find this on YouTube now, but my brother sent me a copy of this behind the scenes documentary that wasn't released to anyone. And I just my jaw fell on the floor just drooling because Steve motherfucking Vai, he improvised the whole fucking thing.
Of course he did. Yeah.
And then he wrote out the chart, and then they performed it live and all that kind of bullshit. But holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. What a tangent.
Yeah. So you know what? Now that I'm looking at it, maybe there are some, and maybe they just need to have more representation. I think I get lost in the there needs to be a more predominant sort of thing. I think there's got to be – there's still that we all have to worship at the altar of Guy Fieri and Alton Brown. And I've got nothing personally against either one of them. Honestly,
right.
I don't.
Right.
But
Good Eats is the
there
bomb.
Shouldn't be marathon after marathon of Triple Deer Guys grocery games. There's got to be some other shows out there. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like we're getting good or great entertainment and talent squeezed out by volume of pretty okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's true, it's not that Triple D isn't interesting or isn't amusing to watch, or Guy's Grocery Games isn't interesting and or amusing to watch. And at least Guy's is highlighting other chefs from other backgrounds and really giving an opportunity for that. So there is a bit of that, but where are the – is it that cooking shows are boring now?
Maybe.
I don't know.
All I know is cooking shows saved my sanity. When I got divorced, I watched nothing but Food Network 24/7.
Oh, see, I would be no more good with that.
Giada was on, and I was like, yeah, Giada, tell me how to cook this food that you never fucking eat.
Yes, seriously.
But, I don't know. I like process shows. I like watching people make a thing, and maybe I'm in the minority, but I like watching people make a thing, whether it's food or a bike or a house or a fucking
And for me it's a bit of that, but I remember watching, it was like an old episode of like Bourdain's No Reservations or something, where he was at like a friend's restaurant.
Bourdain was doing that shit.
And he would talk, like, he did this segment where he talked about making the perfect scrambled egg and the idea of like the pan size, the heat that you're looking for, how much butter, what's really required, a technique that goes with it where it's like, don't crack the egg directly in the pan, crack it into a ramekin, then slowly pour it into the pan. If you want to actually make something, don't be worried about fucking washing another dish. You're an adult. Like, those little things of like, you know, don't use a fork to whisk or anything else. Or sorry, use a fork to whisk, but like use a certain technique when you're going to end up having it in the pan. Use a rubber spatula so this way you don't carve the egg up or carve the pan up. Like this, these little things, those sort of things are super interesting to me.
Oh yeah,
basic stuff. He did another one where he made like pasta with red sauce, simple pasta with red sauce, and the idea of like appreciating food at its most core and teaching people how to be like, hey, so I'm going to teach you how to make a 4-ingredient meal that isn't going to break the bank. And the big thing is technique and care. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love for somebody to show people how to properly fry bacon.
Ooh.
The arguments or merits of oven versus pan. How big of a pan do you need? What's the best heat? Do you start in a cold pan or a hot pan? Do you grease it beforehand? Like, what's the technique that's best? How do you keep it from like waving up too much when it's not in the oven, when it's in a pan?
Yeah.
What's the technique?
I want that now.
those little things I think would be super useful to see.
Yeah.
Where it's like making you a better chef in 30 minutes or less.
Hazelwood fucking watched people make bacon.
Right, but and that's what I'm saying. Like, there's an episode, simple one, about like bacon and eggs or oatmeal. How to make a proper oatmeal, and you just like, okay, here's what you're looking for. You get your store brand oats, you get this, you get that. How do you properly care for it? And then like that versus like overnight oats, and you make a proper one. And you just do a series of like simple stuff. How to make a proper grilled cheese. Most people don't realize best way to do it is mayonnaise, not butter.
Oh.
Because all you're looking for is fat and oil on the outside of the bread to fry with. Butter always, like, unless you heat it, butter will never spread the way that you want it to. And it ends up end up having these like crags all over the place. And then you're trying to spread it across everything. You got to heat the butter. Fuck that. Go get a little mayo and just put a nice shine on the bottom of the bread. And then put it in a medium heat pan and never go any higher than medium heat. A grilled cheese is something that should be respected and loved. You fucking squish that bread, you turn that heat up too much, I'm showing up to your door. God damn it, I'm showing up to your door. Yeah. Yeah, you deserve better. Also, get a decently thick bread. You go pulling Wonder Bread out of that fucking bag, don't do that to yourself. You're an adult, get some proper bread. But so yeah, like,
we need a yan. Sort of we need yan.
We need like a
new
need-
we need new yan.
I need new yen, or I need like a series, like, and that's the thing is, I'd love to see just a series of them, like a Netflix show. It's just a series of them where you go and like, it's a French chef teaching you the merits of a way to cook a steak in a pan with butter.
Whoa,
the way that you should do
fuck.
It. And then you go and you go to Yan or Jet Tila or David Chang or whatever it is. And they teach you how to make dumplings. And they teach you how to make the most basic Chinese food shit that you can totally make. Like, how do you stir fry? Most people don't understand a simple one. Like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do chicken. You're going to want these things as a simple sauce that you're going to create. The proper tech. How to cut an onion the right way. How to dice a green pepper the right way.
Yeah.
Like, those things to be able to help cooking properly. There's a certain way to cut that sort of thing where they end up becoming soft, but not so soft that they're like falling apart, but not so firm that you're crunching into, like, you need that middle ground. Those sort of techniques are super important and everybody could use them.
I feel like Food Network has lost its way, because I think early days they did a lot of that shit. Right. A lot of that shit.
Well, that, like, Alton Brown used to do that shit. Like,
Good Eats was amazing.
Good Eats was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need a bit of that, and I need it done by chefs in the know.
Yes.
I need somebody to go, hey, so here's what you're looking – you want to make street tacos at home. Here's what you really need to make a street taco. Here's what you really need to make an Americanized taco.
Yeah.
And teach people the difference of like – here's what you do. You need to buy flank steak. You need to make it to this type and do it this way. Then you get small tortillas, and then all you need is onion and cilantro and a bit of lime. Ugh, and love.
So
and
good.
Then that's
so
it.
Fucking and get good.
A so proper fucking good. Taco.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
Those things where, like, even if it's something as funny as, like, you get one chef and all that chef does, maybe that's it. You get one, like, one idiot who doesn't understand food, and then one – maybe this is – you know what we need? We need Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
I need an idiot to go try and make food.
Yeah.
And go make – hey, man, I'm going to make tacos. Cool. Hey, you've made tacos before. What do you need? Well, I need ground beef, and then I need taco seasoning, and then I need – and he gets to the shredded cheese, and just Gordon Ramsay comes in, slaps the cart out of his hand.
No, you fucking idiot.
No, this is what's going to happen. And then, like, he pulls in his close personal friend, who the fuck ever.
Jose Andres.
And then looks at the guy. Yeah, and, like, looks at the guy and goes, you're fucking idiot. Listen to this man. And then leaves.
Yeah.
Like, yes. He shows up for, like, 40 seconds, berates somebody, and gets back in his Ferrari and just disappears off into the fog.
Because Gordon knows everybody. Gordon knows everyone who can make this cuisine the right way. Right.
No, I realize also Gordon was a prick about the same thing that Andrew Zimmer was too. And maybe we like I need somebody angry is what I need.
I'll
really
do it.
Like,
we'll do it. We'll both do it.
Yeah, we need somebody with a bit of credibility and clout to fucking yell at somebody. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you need somebody to correct somebody and then introduce somebody else. Like, yeah, it's almost like Adam ruins everything, but for food.
Yeah, I think that would be fun because I feel like it's not to put down the current state of Chinese food.
No.
Because I like that shit. Like, I will go to a mall and I will eat a Panda Express. Like, I do not give a fuck.
It is comfort food. You understand exactly what it is. You're not confused about it. But at the same time, you know when you're digging your plastic fork into the $6 accoutrement of browns and like maroon
brown
colored meat.
yeah
when it's way too brown rice and then the occasional pea and then maroon colored mystery meat that they claim is bourbon chicken. I don't even know what bourbon. What is it? A dude named Bourbon?
Bourbon Johnson.
Was this some Asian guy saw some guy making chicken with bourbon, was like, we can fucking take this, like, right now. We just walk up and we go, oh yeah, you're making bourbon chicken. My grandmother used to make that back in the mainland. And he'd be like, the fuck, what are you talking about? And just be like, nope, Chinese food, stole it, and just run off into the fog.
Yeah, but like I'm sad that more people don't get that experience. Like the first time you had Dan Dan noodles, you're like, oh, this shit is dope. And like every party we had after that, you specifically, you drove down.
I drove down.
From fucking where you are to Sichuan Jin River.
Yes, I drove from Towson down to Rockville, got a gigantic order, like a party tray of Dan Dan noodles, and then drove them the next day. I made a special trip the night before and then drove them the next day up to Westminster.
Yeah.
Transferred them lovingly from the foil container to another large container, slowly and gently heated them up to not burn the noodles or anything else like that.
Yeah.
And then served them to the absolute lily whitest Trump voting ass group of people, and every one of them were like, this is the fucking best. Where did you get these from? We're in Westminster. And I was like, see, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And I explained everything, and once they stopped looking at me like I'm a maniac, I'm like, to get proper food, you have to go to where there are Asian people. That is the idea. To do that.
And I want more people to experience that.
Yeah.
because it's great. Like the first time I had real tacos in Mexico, my mind exploded.
Oh, see, I haven't been to Mexico. I've only had street tacos from people who have at least claimed that they grew up in Mexico.
Yeah.
Or they've got family and it's a family recipe or whatever it is. Yeah, and it's, you know, the street cart vendors and what, like, I feel like I've had relatively close to it.
Yeah. When we were in LA, that was pretty close.
Yeah. I imagine that was pretty close. I imagine the place that we like to go to in DC
is
pretty traditional.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if it's necessarily super traditional, but I feel like it's pretty fucking close.
Yeah.
But that's the idea of, like, find somewhere that has something like that, something very similar to what you're looking for.
And the nice thing about like tacos and Chinese food, like authentic stuff, it's not that much difference price wise. Like you can get a dirt cheap taco that will blow the fuck out of, like that will just demolish Taco Bell. Now you can't get like 50 of them like you can a Taco Bell, but you can get a really affordable taco that's amazing. And I feel like more people have had real tacos than have had dandan noodles, and I think they're missing out because you can have both. You can have dandan noodles, right. You can have real tacos.
I think there's a multi-pronged response here is what we're getting at. I think there needs to be a more open understanding of like the difference in between mall Chinese and proper Chinese.
Yeah.
And I think there's an intimidation factor that happens with traditional Chinese restaurants, like Szechuan Jin River, the one that I actually went down to for the dandan noodles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is a very intimidating location for anyone who is not Asian walking into that place.
No doubt.
I ordered on the phone and the lady was like, really, you want this? And I explained what I was doing. The second I explained, like, yeah, I've got a family thing happening tomorrow, so I'm coming from Towson to come down and pick these up. I'm going to take them back up to Westminster because they've never experienced these, and this is the place to get them. She was like, I am going to be ready for you. I'm going to remember you. And I walked into the place, and I looked around, and I was the only white dude in the place, and it's intimidating that, like, the idea of Marty Day and I driving down to Rockville to go to Szechuan Jin River and being 100% comfortable in the environment. We absolutely should be. The staff there would not make me feel weird at all with any of their conduct. I'd still feel fucking weird because I understand I'm a lily ass white dude in the place where it's almost a question of like, who the fuck told you about this place?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, they're like the staff and everyone else eating there is like, who fucking broke rank and said something to your big ass? Like, genuinely.
Well, now you know how minorities feel in most situations.
Oh, I'm not confused about that shit. Believe me. I get it. And it's fucking terrible. But that's the whole thing is like, I don't know what to do with, like, there's got to be some sort of, you know, we talked about this in a prior episode.
We did.
Too.
We definitely did.
It's almost like a cultural Sherpa.
Yes.
Where like,
yes.
Like I need to take a lily white family from like Westminster and send them into Rockville with you and be like, motherfuckers, we're getting bubble tea. Let's go do the thing, get in the pickup. And like, and you walking them around and then them being like, this is pretty good. I really like this stuff. It's all right. And then they end up going back up there and somebody goes, ooh, who the fuck would want bubble tea? And you hear Larry from the back be like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. I had a chai bubble tea. Delicious as fucking hell. Delicious. John ass straws. Got to stab that shit.
Get it with the milk cap, motherfucker.
Yeah. Did you get the milk? Larry, did you get the milk cap? Like, just...
I would watch a show like that.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want a dude who weighs just about 3 bills with no sleeves yelling at another dude from the side of his pickup, did you get the milk cap at the bubble tea place? I want that. Because it's
Chai life.
Like, yeah, it's equally awful, great, and funny as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
it hits all of those things. Because I imagine – if that actually happened, two dudes get – like one dude is looking like Larry the Cable Guy and one guy is actually Jeff Foxworthy. And just like they're coming out of one of the bubble tea places in Rockville and you hear Jeff lean out the side of the thing. Did you get it? Did you get the thing? And – watching everyone in the parking lot be like, the fuck is going on right now?
That'd be so
good. Then looking back at Larry and him just walking out, two giant bubble teas, just proud as a motherfucker, just, man, I got the thing. Yes, I did. Just, yeah, or just walking.
I got the pop bubbles here. I got that milk cap over here.
Yes. Kicks the fucking door open at Kung Fu Tea and just goes, get her done, and just fucking walks to the truck. I'm sure this has happened somewhere, but I want more of this. Yeah. At least then there's some sort of thing. Like, we've got to figure out a way to normalize Asian food in everyone else's palate and figure out a way to not have it be sugary, blown out bullshit.
Yeah. You know,
like I know they covered a lot of this in David Chang's Netflix show.
It was so
where you're talking about dumplings.
Yeah.
And you're talking about delicious. Like, yeah, ugly delicious. Thank you. We're like, you can charge $26 for four ravioli, but somehow tray and tray of dumplings are only like $8 a piece.
Yeah.
And right, it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Someone needs to tell these motherfuckers they're undercharging. And it's like, I think it's genuinely like it's a devaluing of Asian food where people in America don't treat it like a delicacy.
Yeah.
Nobody pays attention to the amount of effort it takes to go into this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, I think we're all happy we can abuse that price point because it means more fucking dumplings. And
oh, hell yeah.
But at the same time, if that price went from $8 a tray to $10 a tray and they were able to hire another staffer and maybe the owner wouldn't have to work
8 days a week.
Right. Yeah. 8 days a week. And they might be able to work 7.5 days a week and maybe not die at 55.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more of that. So
I think
there's gotta be some sort of trade off going on there.
Yeah. Like I think $10 for a plate of like Xiaolongbao would be amazing. You get them for like $6, but I would pay the 10. I would pay the 10.
You get what I mean. Like, yeah, I think that's part of the problem is like, I feel like, especially when it comes to Chinese food, the other problem is most people who are, white ass Americans don't understand the difference in between Thai food and Chinese food or Japanese food and Chinese food. Like the second noodling company is your barometer of like, what do you like?
Yeah.
Like,
did you know that Noodle Company does tasting menus? Brandon Chalmers, when I was working on Earthworld, we went to Noodle and Company so many times. The owner one day came out to us and said, hey, would you guys like a tasting menu? And we're like, what the fuck are you talking about? He said, invite, a couple of your friends. We'll give you a free meal. We had 10 people in a Noodle and Company in Crystal City, Virginia. And they gave us like a 3-course meal for free.
That's awesome.
It was amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, and please understand, it's not me actually cracking on Noodle and Company, but like the idea people not understanding the difference in between types of noodles or sauces, backgrounds or anything else like that. And just lumping all of it into quote unquote Chinese food.
Yeah.
It doesn't respect the culture.
If you can tell the difference between, a barbecue sandwich and like a hamburger, you ought to be able to tell the difference between Thai noodles and Japanese noodles and Chinese noodles.
Right. Like, but nobody puts forth the effort.
Yeah.
That's true. By the way, to go back to your point about like getting great stuff the first time, Thai food. The first experience with Thai food I ever had, Dan Malahome's mom made an entire like gigantic Tupperware container of pad thai. So my first experience with genuine Thai cuisine and pad thai was a homemade recipe by his mom, who is first generation.
And now you are ruined.
No. And now everything else is trying to meet that bar, but man, can I appreciate it way, way the fuck more. Cause if P.F. Chang's was my first experience with pad thai, I'd be ruined because everything else wouldn't taste like greasy assholes. Because I'd be like, why would I want to eat pad thai? It tastes like peanuts and burnt shit. Like, why would I want that?
Yeah. Yeah. Your perspective would be slightly warped. I think
that's the problem is people haven't had an opportunity to not even taste like traditional. Well, you can Americanize it a bit, understanding your palate, but fucking make it good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, don't be like, I don't like ribs because Chili's made them and I don't think they're very good. Like, fuck off.
Fuck you. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. But there are genuinely people who are like, oh, yeah, no, I tried this thing at Red Robin and I don't really like it. So I'm definitely not a fan of this.
Ugh.
You know it's fucking true.
If
it's true of that generic ass shit, you know it's super true of Asian cuisine.
Yeah. They didn't have this at P.F. Chang's. I ain't eating it.
Imagine trying to get some of these motherfuckers to go to P.F. Chang's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a very real issue, and I don't know exactly how to solve it, but I think dragging your white-ass friends out to very cool Asian spots where they normally wouldn't go, please, please, please fucking take them.
Oh, yeah.
Can we get... Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, go ahead.
We got the spot. We got Pike Kitchen. We're lousy with it in here down in Rockville and in Virginia. Right. They have a place called The Block. We're getting a block that's just
nice.
It's like a cafeteria, just all Asian food. I'm surprised they don't have stuff like this in Baltimore, because I feel like Baltimore would be a place where some of the stuff would be.
I don't know where they would put it. This is the problem.
That's true. It's already built up.
Right. And it's not necessarily something that would define a gentrified sort of area. Yeah. The closest thing that they have in like Fed Hill, there's a place called Jazz Soju or something like that.
That's fun.
Is right. Well, it is, because it's like one part a jazz bar, but like one part trying to do Korean food. But the Korean food's mediocre, and it really looks like somebody just decided, like, I'm going to hang jazz records on the wall. Like, it feels very fucking like, some dude named Kyle, like, has a fucking love of fedoras and, like, date rape. And this is what his thing is.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody wants to play Miles Davis and make you mediocre ass chicken is really what it is.
Ugh.
Right, but like that place, as kitschy as it is, can't fucking do anything and can't get out of its own way.
Mm.
I don't know if that area is really supportive enough of it. And if you get down into like near Micah, I don't think that the area is nice enough, or the clientele is interested enough in having traditional Asian food down there. I think it thrives in Rockville because there's an Asian community there.
Yeah, we have a lot of Asian people.
If you want the experience, go to the experience.
Sure, sure.
Like, we're totally fine with it when it's, you want Greek food, you go to Greek Town. When you want Italian food, you go to Little Italy. Like, there's no confusion about that. It's totally fine. Why is it that Asian food is any different?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't see anything wrong with it. The idea of going, oh, okay, yeah, I want traditional Asian food. Where do I need to go? Well, okay, there might be some place around where I am in the greater Baltimore area that is pretty good. But if I know if I really want it and I want a couple different experiences, I'm going down to Rockville. Just now.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Like, that's just what it is. And that's totally fine. I think people got to be willing to travel a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So let's recap this motherfucker. So we're talking about take your friends to, if you've had an awesome Asian food experience, take your friends.
Yeah,
absolutely. There needs to be a TV show or more TV shows with Asian chefs and getting them a more pronounced location, some sort of instructional show with some sort of shouty asshole.
Yes.
Basically yelling at people and teach you how to properly cook.
Yes.
That probably having really good traditional stuff the first time isn't going to ruin you. There's nothing wrong with mall Chinese, so long as you understand it's not the end all be all Chinese.
Yeah, yeah. It'll fill you up.
It
sometimes
know the difference of where you are and what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big, like I said, there's a big difference in between a, you know, Michelin star chef making you a burger and the kid at McDonald's.
Right.
Know this. They're both making you burgers.
Right.
Make no mistake.
Right.
But there's a fucking difference.
Yeah.
Mall Chinese is somewhere probably north of McDonald's, but not a ton
not
more.
A lot. They right. got more vegetables than McDonald's.
That's fair. I'll give them that. But yeah, like yeah. that's the idea. So I don't know if there's anything to really fix other than I think maybe an encouragement of there's got to be some more.
Yeah.
Some more. There's got to be more.
There's more. And if you feel intimidated going into a Chinese restaurant with all Chinese people, they want your money.
That's the other part. Right.
Just go in and pay them to feed you.
Absolutely. Like, by the way, the other thing is too. Go in with a complimentary attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't feel comfortable going to Szechuan Jin River myself. I know this because I am relatively convinced that they're like, he is not interested in it. He's going to mispronounce everything. He's going to scoff at whatever the fuck we're going to feed him, and he's not going to tip well.
Yeah.
Like, and I understand that. I get it.
Yeah.
By coming in, by calling the lady who I believe is the owner or one of the lady who runs the place, and complimenting her right out of the gate, I immediately set a tone of like, when I walked in, there's no confusion who I was, and
you're the guy,
right? Yeah, and like immediately was super nice and super happy and was like joking around with me, and I'm pretty convinced if I walked back in and I mentioned that story, she'd be like, the guy, hey, come yeah. on, sit down. Let's go do like, yeah, go yeah. ahead and enjoy the thing. And I would have a much different experience than some random dude walking in off the street.
Yeah.
Come in with a curious and positive attitude about the place.
With your eaten whether face.
Whether you've heard about it or not, that white lie, ironic, of – oh, yeah, I heard this place is really amazing. I really want to try it. What do you recommend? That sort of attitude yeah. goes a long way.
And you'll get the real menu. You won't get the bullshit yeah. menu. You'll get the real menu.
Even if you get the bullshit menu, at least be honest with them. I like spice, but I don't want to get killed. I've never had this experience. What are the things that are there? And ask about things. Ask about what's the cut of meat? How is it prepared? Like, ask these questions. Be comfortable with it. Don't wait and be vague about it and then have a bowl of something come out to you and you go, and then you pick yeah, yeah. around whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you eat like, you know, six fucking, you know, pieces of potato or whatever the fuck it is. And then you're like, I'm good. Like, yeah.
Being curious and asking thoughtful questions is a great way to get people excited to serve you or to give recommendations. They'll be like, oh, yeah. well, you should try this. You should try this. You should try this. And I think we need more, just more.
Yep.
More.
Yeah. Yep. And you know what, while we're at it, because we already brought that up, be curious to your servers and then be respectful of your servers. They deal with your shit all day.
Oh yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Jamie Noguchi, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Jamie Noguchi, on Twitter, Angry Zen Master, on Facebook, but if I haven't met you in person, I probably won't follow you. And then, you know, here on the YouTubes, on the podcast, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Brandon Chalmers, where can they find you?
On Instagram at that guy Chalmers. And hopefully I'll be firing back up the Instagram machine relatively soon. I've been taking a break for a bit. So hopefully get back on that. I'm on Facebook as well. If you want to reach out to me, just let me know who you are. I can't promise I'll follow you back, or maybe I'll friend you, but maybe I won't follow you because I don't want to be a fucking internet troll. I'm happy to be friends with people, but I don't want to be an internet
you
troll.
You like fighting too. Like,
oh,
you'll fight a motherfucker.
Is, I will absolutely fight a motherfucker. Got into that shit the other day. Anyway,
don't do that.
I will 100% fight a motherfucker. Condescending ass college graduate douchebag trying to fucking justify the fucking pay gap in between men. Fuck you.
Oh, no. Anyway, oh, I think I saw that one. Oh, fuck that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you did. Mm. And related to somebody who was also jumping in on that. Yeah. Yeah. Multiple people who were related to that person jumping on that dude. Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, super awkward. Anyway, yeah.
Hooray. Oh, I don't know. It's not official. It's not officially announced by the website, but we could talk about it, I guess. San Diego Comic-Con, Brandon Chalmers is not going to be there, but his presence will not be unfelt because Brandon, me, and our buddy Phil Chan of Digital Pimp, we have an exclusive San Diego shirt coming out. It's called It's Right Not Fight. It's from our brand that we're starting off Draw right now. Sometimes you'll see me wearing I'm wearing my Taco Cat shirt, but sometimes I'm sporting that kind of thing.
You've got the bracelet on right now.
Yeah.
Of Draw right now.
I got a fucking do it bracelet. You've got
the bracelet. All right, fine, whatever.
But we're doing a soft launch at San Diego Comic-Con. After that, you're going to be hearing a lot from us. We're going to be like branding the shit out of ourselves. We're going to be wearing merch like a motherfucker. Like we'll have banners and stuff. But yeah, so if you're interested in checking out what we got, just follow us on our socials. We'll be pimping it out as soon as possible. We got a month till the show. So I'm fucking hyped. I don't know if you're hyped about it, but I'm hyped about it.
I'm excited for your excitement because I won't physically be there, so I'm not going to have the same level of like, holy fucking shit. But, you know, then again, I'm not the biggest con person to start with, so that's totally fine. But I'm excited to be trying something new, and I'm excited to put some cool stuff out there and see where it lands. And I think it's a cool message, and I think it's a rad design. So
it's going
to
be a lot of fun.
You guys should totally check it out.